It's Thursday, July 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Donald Trump is now the official Republican nominee for president. We'll hear next from his choice for vice president.
The North is clearly trying to apply some pressure on our countries to demonstrate that they think they can.
North Korea makes its thoughts known, concern for stability in Turkey. Also ahead, young filmmakers fight drug abuse. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. The Republican National Convention remains in full swing. Indiana Governor Mike Pence, a conservative stalwart picked by Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump to be his vice presidential running mate, is set to make the case a short time from now why they should be elected as the next American leaders. The 57-year-old Pence is making the headline speech on this, the third day of the four-day convention in Cleveland, Ohio, and just a day after convention delegates formally nominated Trump, who told them that their journey is not over.
Together, we've achieved historic results with the largest vote total in the history of the Republican Party. This is a movement, but we have to go all the way.
Trump, a brash billionaire real estate mogul, is the first major party presidential candidate in the United States since the 1950s to become a Republican or Democrat standard bearer without ever having held elected office. Pence, a longtime congressman from the Midwestern state, and later chief executive, has been linking Trump this week at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio, to the heritage of a favorite Republican icon. That would be Ronald Reagan, who served two terms as the U.S. president back in the 1980s. VOA's Doug Bernard joins us live from the convention hall. Doug, that comparison is quite a tall order to live up to.
It is indeed. Greetings from Cleveland, Jim, and apologies if I sound a bit stuffed up. A number of us in the media in the work areas have come down with the sniffles,
uh-oh,
but I don't know that we can really blame the RNC on that. So now you had mentioned that tonight's big event is the address by the vice presidential nominee, Mike Pence. But there really are, I would say, two big speeches tonight. Now, Mike Pence will be speaking in support of Donald Trump, trying to convince the United States that Mr. Trump is a capable and confident and a leader that can be trusted. And also, Senator Ted Cruz, who was a opponent of Donald Trump, and sometimes a bitter opponent, will be speaking, I think, mostly in support of Ted Cruz. The senator has not yet said whether he will endorse Donald Trump, which might be odd for him to get up and speak at the convention and not endorse. But he, along with a number of other people, Senators Tom Cotton, Scott Walker, some others, all seem to be looking not so much at the 2016 election, but the 2020 election. So it's an interesting contrast about who's speaking tonight and the kinds of messages that we should be listening to in their addresses.
And that seems to be a rather familiar tone that we've seen so far, where a lot of the speakers have talked about defeating Hillary Clinton, but not so much about how great Donald Trump is.
And that's exactly right. In fact, I just finished up a feature on that exact thing. You know, if you listen to how many times people say Donald Trump, whether in support of this or that, it's very few. In fact, there's a quote here, if I can just pull this up very quickly. It was Wyoming Senator John Barrasso was asked today on CNN, if the party was unifying around Donald Trump. And he said this, quote, "We're unified about issues. This election is about jobs, putting America back to work. Hillary Clinton won't. That's what unites us." So I kind of think there it is in a nutshell, not a single mention of party nominee Donald Trump, but really defending the GOP brand and at every opportunity taking a swipe at the likely Democratic opponent, Hillary Clinton.
And, of course, very briefly, we have heard from Donald Trump's children who, of course, said a lot about their father.
They did. I thought, you know, some of those addresses were Donald Trump Jr. He was a very effective speaker. He's not ever entered the political fray before, and a number of people were saying, well, gosh, there's a star was born with his address. Tiffany Trump had a story which was, you know, somewhat endearing, how Donald Trump would write notes of encouragement on her report cards when she was a young child. And, of course, I think now we can finally, after 2.5 days, put to bed any more discussion about Melania Trump and plagiarism. A staffer has come out, taken responsibility. The campaign is more than ready to move on from this tremendous distraction. So let us never again hear about it again.
And we never did hear that famous Trump catchphrase, you're fired.
That's exactly right. It's said because Donald Trump is said to be a rather loyal employer. He does not like firing people. It also may suggest that because the Trump family is so close and this staffer is so very close to the family, that may have played a role as well.
VOA's Doug Bernard from the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio. Doug, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We stay with the Republican National Convention for our next segment. And as always, our social media guru, G. Abby Lee, is right here in the studio with the latest buzz online about the convention. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim. Just like yesterday, we're talking about two women from the Trump campaign. On Wednesday, it was about two women, but let's begin with Trump's younger daughter, Tiffany Trump.
Okay, well, she was definitely one of the speakers. What was the online reaction to her appearance?
The online community responded quite positively. Unlike his older children, Tiffany Trump wasn't always included in the spotlight during his presidential campaign. And Tuesday night was really the first big appearance for her as Trump's daughter. But that doesn't mean she has been shying away from the public eye in other aspects. As a teenager, she was an aspiring pop star. She recorded one pop song called a few years ago called Like a Bird, and I just checked, you can still purchase it online if you like.
Wow.
She's also very active on Instagram, but that's not uncommon for her age cohort. Based on media reports, hashtag Tiffany Trump was the most searched speaker at Tuesday night's convention. That means her name was searched more than House Speaker Paul Ryan, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, and her own brother, Donald Trump Jr. Donald Trump seems to be pretty content with her speech, tweeting, in all caps, great job, Tiffany. So proud of you. Love you.
Well, let's move on to the other trending woman of Tuesday night's convention. Mm-hmm. What's the online reaction like to Melania Trump's plagiarism controversy?
It's all over social media that a staffer named Meredith McIver wrote that speech. But the real question people are asking is, who is this McIver lady? There's an image of a statement with her signature on it that Melania Trump posted, but McIver is not on Twitter, and strangely enough, she just joined Facebook after this controversy. So not surprisingly, another hashtag that's trending at this hour is hashtag, does Meredith McIver exist? Jim, back to you.
Well, there's your homework assignment for all of you. Go out there and see if you can find out who Meredith McIver is. Thanks so much for the wrap-up, G. And a link to this program is available on Twitter at VOA_IE. Unlike Meredith McIver, you can find myself and G on Twitter at VOA Stevenson and at G Abby Lee. Here are some of the top stories that are trending at this hour in Asia. The United States moves to seize assets allegedly bought with stolen Malaysian funds. Taiwan fishing boats start trip to defend contested island. A top U.S. admiral says exchanges with China conditional on safety. Vietnamese nationalism surges over South China Sea ruling. Japanese waiting for Pokemon Go and face more disappointment. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at the voanews.com website, also on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. The United States has condemned North Korea's launch of 3 ballistic missiles, which Pyongyang says was part of a simulated preemptive attack against South Korean ports and airfields used by U.S. forces. White House spokesman Josh Earnest said Tuesday such tests violate U.N. Security Council prohibitions.
This provocation only serves to increase the international community's resolve to countering the DPRK's prohibited activities, including through implementing existing UN Security Council resolutions. I'm confident that the United States will continue to engage our partners in the region, including not just our allies Japan and South Korea, but even countries like Russia and China that are also concerned about North Korea's destabilizing actions. But what's clear is that North Korea is isolated like never before. The international community is united like never before. You know, hopefully that will lead to a situation where North Korea makes a strategic decision to come out of the shadows of the international community and try to rejoin the international community. But before we can do that, they're going to have to make a clear commitment to ending these kinds of provocations and abiding by the UN Security Council resolutions that govern both their nuclear weapons program and their ballistic missile program.
RAND Corporation Korean expert Bruce Bennett tells VOA's Victor Beatty the latest test firings may be North Korea's effort to try to dispel skepticism that Pyongyang has the capability to deliver nuclear weapons on ballistic missiles.
It may or may not be possible. We don't know, but the North is clearly trying to apply some pressure on our countries to demonstrate that they think they can. And I think also this was Kim's effort to demonstrate his furor at being put on the U.S. sanctions list for his human rights behavior. After all, as far as Kim is concerned, he is the god of North Korea. And so the U.S. sanctions designation is a case of blasphemy within the North Korean culture and calls for very strong actions in response. Presumably, our country expected that and thought that this was something that we were prepared to do.
What kind of missiles were involved in Tuesday's test?
We don't know for sure. It would appear, given the range to which they were fired, that they were Scud missiles. Maybe one of them was a Nodong, the other two Scuds, but maybe all three Scud missiles of some form. So this would be an important statement that the Scud missiles can cover all of South Korea. What he's effectively saying is, I've got nuclear weapons that I could attack anywhere in South Korea I want to.
Has he mastered the miniaturization of warheads on such missiles?
And that we obviously don't know. You know, his test that he made in January with the nuclear weapon, the fourth nuclear test, he claims that demonstrated miniaturization. It wasn't as effective as he clearly had hoped because the depth of burial of the weapon in January suggests he was hoping for a 50 kiloton yield and only got about 8 to 10, but that still could be miniaturized. We really don't know if he's there. He's simply trying to claim he is.
These missile firings came about a week after South Korea and the United States chose a site in the South to deploy the so-called Terminal High Altitude Area Defense, or THAAD, anti-missile system.
This was a direct response to THAAD. It was an effort to say, for Kim Jong-un, he can meet the challenge placed by the U.S. defense. He can overwhelm it. I think it's still important to have it. The point is, whether or not THAAD is there, it's not going to make a difference in the magnitude of the threat that North Korea can pose.
RAND Corporation Korean expert Bruce Bennett. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has declared a three-month state of emergency following last week's thwarted coup in his country, saying the emergency is needed to hunt down all of those believed to be responsible for the coup attempt. Turkey also says exiled Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen orchestrated the effort and wants him extradited from the United States. Middle East Institute scholar Zubair Iqbal says he believes the government's reaction so far constitutes an overreaction to events.
I think the idea here is that the United States would very much like to see Turkey not going overboard. It's a pendulum, and it's going to go to the extreme before it comes down to the middle. And any steps that one can take in order to keep them from, quote unquote, going too far will be helpful for everybody, including for the United States. And I think this kind of an offer is a good offer. One is not clear, though, as to what will it do, especially in the context that Turkey's already made a formal request for Mr. Gulen to be sent back to Turkey to face charges. I think what has to happen is to go through a process whereby the Turks can be assured that their government is not under threat and that this kind of a step was misconstrued. Whosoever has done it has to pay a price for it. But at the same time, tell them that, look, we guarantee that we are with you and nothing of the kind will happen again. In the process, bring them back from the brink.
Middle East Institute scholar Zubair Iqbal. You'll find more on Turkey on our website at voanews.com. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News is mobile and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. When Frederick County Council member Billy Shreve watched films made by students at a Maryland film festival last year, he was surprised at the talent and creativity of young filmmakers. The event inspired him to harness that creativity to fight drug use through a film program called Classmates for Life. The contest is open to students of all levels, elementary, middle, and high schools. Faiza El-Masri tells us more about the contest and its first three winners. Faith Lapidus narrates.
We all have an assemblage of lights, our friends, our family. Each person represents a light. Each of us are our own power source, keeping those lights on.
Lights Out is the first place winner on the high school level of the contest. The film was made by Alex Ismael, a rising 10th grader at Linganore High School. In the film, he used light bulbs as a metaphor.
Our friends and family around us each represent a different light, and we need to keep those lights on, and just the brighter the better. Doing drugs really is going to stop you from being there for those people.
Linganore High School principal Dave Keene says the school staff were excited that one of their students won first prize.
We were also very excited to hear about the program in general because we know that students can use their peer pressure for positive things.
Efforts to include kids in any discussion about solutions to the drug problem is greatly needed and appreciated.
Sometimes young people attempting to escape their lives, they turn to chemicals and unnatural items to try to make them feel better, but they realize very quickly that feeling of betterness is temporary. Unfortunately, for some of our students, addiction sets in rather quickly, and we need to do all we can to not have students even tread into the waters of drug use.
Frederick County Council member Bill Shreve, who came up with the idea for the contest, says 95 students submitted films.
We kept it simple. How have drugs wrecked your world for middle school and high school students? And why are drugs bad for elementary school students? Over 50,000 people have viewed the videos on our YouTube channel, Classmates for Life. The parents love it because they can sit down at home, watch a few videos with their kids, talk about what the video content was.
On the middle school level, Alexandra Kish's video got first place.
I wanted to make it straightforward, don't do drugs. And I cut out the drugs and I like colored them and stuff. And I kind of did the more well-known drugs like cigarettes, and then I drew needles with like skull on it. And I explained to them like how much money people spend a year on these drugs.
Alexandra says drugs rob people's money and their well-being too.
I know someone who was very severely affected by drugs. I mean, this person just does not look well. She's not well mentally, physically. She's just is out of it. And if someone does drugs, that affects other people. This person kind of affected me, although I don't see this person much, but my position could be anyone else's position, and I just don't want that to happen.
The first place winner in the elementary school category comes from Centerville Elementary School, a film titled Drugs Can Make Your Life Explode by fourth grader Liam Timpain.
A drug is anything that you take that can make you feel good for a while but can end up hurting you. This is a drug. You can get addicted to it and it gives you cancer. This is also a drug.
Liam says he made the film to have a positive impact on his peers, and for another important reason.
My dad is also a movie maker, and I wanted him to feel good about me. And I decided to make my own video. My dad was a really big help by, like, showing me the stuff he knows. Like, he'd show me how to do something while I'm editing it so I could do it myself.
Not only did he learn how to make films, he was also pleased with the feedback he received.
I've been congratulated and my whole class clapped for me. On our health lessons, we're talking about how bad drugs are for you. And actually one of the kids in my class mentioned for that part of the health lesson, he said, it's kind of like what Liam's video is talking about.
Starting next year, and because of its huge success, the Classmates for Life Anti-Drug Student Film Contest will be a statewide program, giving more students an opportunity to creatively fight drug abuse. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
You've been listening to International Edition. Don't forget, all the latest from the Republican National Convention can be found on our International Edition programs, also on our website at voanews.com. You can check us out on Facebook as well at VOA Now and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thank you so much for joining us, and many thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States stands with a democratically elected government in Turkey after an attempted military coup that took place on July 15th and 16th. According to the Turkish government, over 200 people were killed during the failed attempt, and more than 1,400 were injured. At a news conference in Brussels, Secretary of State John Kerry called Turkey a NATO ally and a key partner. We stand squarely on the side of the elected leadership in Turkey, said Mr. Kerry, noting that both he and President Barack Obama had stated their support for the democratically elected Erdogan government as the attempted coup began to unfold. But Secretary Kerry also urged the government of Turkey to uphold the highest standards of respect for the nation's democratic institutions and the rule of law. We will certainly support bringing the perpetrators of the coup to justice, but we also caution against a reach that goes well beyond that and stress the importance of the democratic rule being upheld. Thousands of people in the military, the judiciary, and other areas have been detained in Turkey in the aftermath of the coup. The Erdogan government has raised the concern of the United States and other countries over a crackdown on journalists and opposition media outlets. In May, State Department spokesperson John Kirby urged the government to abide by its constitutional and OSCE commitments to fundamental principles of democracy, including due process, judicial independence, and freedom of expression. These principles are key elements of every healthy democracy and are enshrined in the Turkish Constitution, Mr. Kirby had said. At a press briefing this week, State Department Deputy Spokesperson Mark Toner emphasized that there is no justification for the attempted overthrow of a democratically elected government like Turkey, and he reiterated U.S. support for the Erdogan government. Mr. Toner noted, however, that in the aftermath of political upheavals, there can be an impulse by countries to overreach, and he urged Turkey's leaders to remain mindful of the democratic values they and the Turkish people hold dear.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email,
visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.